Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to the one and only Brunch Network, where thousands tune in weekly to listen to our hosts roll out of bed and talk all things sports and gambling. Now for the guys that help cure all your hangovers.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to a live sports brunch here on Wednesday, March 28th, 8 o'clock p.m. on the East Coast. As always, my name is Joe Caputo, joined by my co-host, Chris Malicki. Chris, welcome to the live airwaves.
We're live, and in about 16 and a half hours, we will have baseball as well, so life is good.
Life is very good in brunch land right now. We are hoping to have a very eventful show here. Well, we will have a very eventful show. We have a lot to talk about, including a lot of baseball, and hopefully we will have plenty of callers calling in. We know we have one coming up in just a few minutes. So, Chris, opening thoughts, what's the outlook for baseball season? Are you pumped? What are you thinking Red Sox-wise? Just give me some of your initial thoughts going into this show here tonight.
I mean, I'm extremely excited. I think baseball's on the rise. It's back. It's doing well. And I think, you know, a big thing that we will talk about both in this show and as the season goes on, what people want to hear, the Red Sox and the Yankee rivalry. And I don't want to sound like an ESPN or a talking head where, you know, it's like, oh, the rivalry's back. But legitimately, these two teams are both very good this year. And I think if you break it down the way we were about to, it's going to be a lot more fascinating. So I'm pumped. You know, I know a lot of people say, oh, baseball doesn't start in April. Like, it doesn't start until, like, the summer or after the All-Star break or whatever. Like,
yeah.
I'm pumped for game one, and I'm pumped for game two, and I'm pumped for game three. So I'm a guy who, you know, watches pretty much and follows every game of the season religiously, at least for my Sox. And I know you're the same with the Yanks. So it's going to be good. And, you know, I think one thing I will say is how we're going to try to handle baseball this season. We will cover the whole MLB, but we're going to focus more so on the AL East and the NL East, and even more so on the Red Sox, Yankees, Mets, and Phillies. We know that the
yes.
majority of our listeners are around that area. So don't worry, we're not forgetting about the Cubs, we're not forgetting about the Dodgers, the Astros, but we will be having our sights set specifically on a few teams.
I feel like the times we're going to get to those teams is going to be when we're talking about the betting. And we have a lot
right,
of that to talk about
thing.
As well.
Yeah,
this year.
Another – Absolutely, and I think, you know, it's funny, a lot of people I've talked to, I mean, it's either you have the people who say, like, God, you can't bet baseball, like, you just can't do it, and then you have the other half people who are like, baseball's my favorite sport to bet, and that's
right.
kind of where I am. I mean, I'm going to miss those long college basketball Saturdays where we have, like, 20-plus bets in, but baseball's a lot of fun, and our good pal, the model, will help us through it, and we'll help you through it too. We're going to have some picks as the year goes along. So,
yeah,
you know,
absolutely.
If you don't have a dog in the race, we'll have some for you.
And the model is right now. It's live. It's viewable to all brunch fans. It's been posted on. You posted the link on Facebook. It's on our Twitter account at the Brunch Pod, and it is viewable for today, for the remainder of this show, and then into tomorrow. The entire opening day of the MLB season, you will be able to follow along with the model and see how the model is faring on opening day. Now, I mean, I think that there's some kind of guidelines that need to be followed when you're betting baseball and following a model that, you know, spits out scores after score for, you know, a 162-game season. There's obviously going to be ups and downs. I'm not making any excuses for the model right now, but if you expect this thing to go 15-0 every day, you know, you got to look somewhere else. But this
or even
thing
you
has...
expect it to hit all of its picks or an above-average amount of its picks the next couple of days. But, you know, we can't guarantee
right.
that, especially, like you said, in a season this long.
Right. But we can guarantee that there's probably been more time put into this model, this project, in my life, and I think probably yours and Connor's as well. Connor's going to be joining us shortly. Than anything else in the past 2 years. I mean, this model started
well,
back in.
Well, of course, besides the brunch, but.
well, I kind of combined that all into one because all
the
research
under
the
brunch and all. Umbrella.
Yeah, I mean, everything that I've learned from doing the model has been, you know, I've taken with me and I talk about on the brunch. But I mean, this thing's been. We started construction on it back May of 2016. So we're closing in on now 2 years of the model being in the works. And it's still not completely perfected. I mean, this is the best that I've felt about it in a long, long time. I mean, this is there's not much more to do, which is why I feel very confident about it going into this season. But there are I never look at the model as completely finished, because I know that there's always opportunities to improve it. But I will say, I'm putting my money where my mouth is. I am betting on a few opening day games tomorrow. I'll maybe reveal that a little bit later. Are you, how long do you think you're going to be staying away from baseball? I know you want things to kind of settle in a little
bit. I want to have the nice sample size. And honestly, after betting college basketball games and probably having at least like 5 to 6 bets in minimum a day for the past 3.5 months, it's going to be nice to just relax a little bit and, you know, focus on the rest of the world out there, which there, Joe, I can confirm there is a world out there besides betting. But I think, I don't know, because I remember last year I said I'll wait till Memorial Day. I don't think I quite got to Memorial Day. So we'll see. Maybe it depends on how things are going. I think at least like a nice month, because you always get the people who get hot in the beginning and the trends that start to develop, it takes a little while. So I'd like to at least wait out a bit. But, I mean, I've got plenty of reason to be watching baseball because, A, the Red Sox, and, B, it's just such a great sport. So, and we'll get to all of that in a little bit.
Well, let's get into the AL East right now. And we do have our first caller coming into the show right now. We'd like to welcome Connor Egan to the brunch. Connor, thanks so much for joining us today. You ready to talk some baseball, buddy?
Oh, I absolutely am. Thank you, my friend. I've been waiting to come on the brunch for a while, so thanks for having me on.
Connor Egan, for those of you not familiar, huge. Yeah, I mean, he's been a big fan of the brunch. He has a brunch T-shirt, so he checks out as a fan. But he's a little bit more than a fan. He's been an integral part of the model, which we were just talking about, Connor, before you got on. We have not gotten into any of the ALEs talk yet. I know you were you want us to wait, so we waited. He's an integral part of the model. 2 years running, this thing's been cooking, and Connor's insight, it's second to none in my opinion in terms of, Connor's been kind of on my level and even maybe a step above me in terms of the baseball knowledge. Very much respect Connor's opinion, so glad to have you on today. All right.
Thank you, brother. I appreciate that.
No problem. Let's get into some of the MLB talk, and let's start in the AL East. And, of course, you have the rivalry that not only transcends this podcast with its co-hosts being on opposite ends of it, but it's considered the best rivalry in all of sports, the Yanks and the Red Sox. And, obviously, last year, both teams kind of did their thing, the Red Sox winning the division. Yanks made it further in the playoffs. So I guess the best way to start is by saying, A, the Yankees are the favorite to win the AL East this year, and B, I want to get both of your predictions right now. We'll start with Chris, because I want to hear his biased or unbiased opinion, however he presents it.
Ooh,
who is going to win the AL East in your mind, Chris?
All right, well, first off, let me start by saying I'm doing my best, and I feel like I really have done a good job in being, unbiased with the Red Sox. I mean, I'm sure both of you guys can agree that I'm probably more biased the other way in a negative sense. But when I was doing some research on these two teams, more than what I already know, I was trying to figure out, unbiased, who the better team is. And I would say the Yankees probably are the better team. Now, what was interesting to me when I looked a little deeper is that everybody talks about the Yankees lineup and how impossible it's going to be to get anyone out and how many runs they're going to score. And then on the other hand, everyone talks about how good the Red Sox pitching staff is, one of, if not the best in baseball. Now, I would say that I have a bit of a concern with both the Yankees lineup and the Red Sox pitching staff, and I think that, honestly, in terms of the Yankees rotation and bullpen, of course, and the Red Sox lineup, I'm not as worried, So I'll get into it with the Red Sox first, and then I'll touch on the Yankees. I'll let you guys go ahead. But I think the Red Sox, they're due for a bounce-back year offensively. I mean, you've got J.D. Martinez, of course, to add. But right now, all of the guys who are expected to regress positively, I mean, you've got Andrew Benintendi, Mookie Betts, Xander Bogaerts, the big three. Mookie was on an MVP level 2 years ago. Xander played terribly and was hurt last year, and Benintendi, of course, getting into his second full year in the majors. But even guys like Jackie Bradley, Dustin Pedroia, and even Hanley Ramirez, who I think kind of sucks, but if he's used the correct way by Alex Cora in a platoon, I think that they can get some production out of him with Mitch Moreland there. Now, the rotation, and of course, you know, another guy who people forget about, Rafael Devers, they're getting a full season out of him. Now, you had the first year, I know Devers isn't like a MVP-level player right now, but, I mean, you had half a season of Pablo Sandoval last year compared to Devers, which is pretty gross. So when you combine all that, and then especially with how good that outfield is, especially defensively, I think that the Red Sox lineup should have a nice bounce back in a year they won 93 games. So from a year they won 93 games. So I think they'll be good there. The rotation worries me a bit because of the injuries right now. The depth is normally strong because they have their rotation would be Sale, Price, Porcello, Pomeranz, and Eduardo Rodriguez, who are all really good. I mean, you know, none of those guys are, I would say, are bad pitchers. And I think, you know, when you if you can get a healthy, at least semi-price season out of Price, and then if Pomeranz regresses a little bit negatively and Porcello regresses a little bit positively, I think you've got a pretty solid rotation there. Right now, Pomeranz on the DL, Eduardo Rodriguez on the DL, and Steven Wright is suspended, who would be their sixth starter, although I'm not really sure what we're going to get out of Steven Wright. Last time we saw
him, Steven Wright, good old Steven Wright, Chris.
Yeah, yeah, once was the GOAT, now the WOAT. But I think, you know, like we were talking about it before we came on the show, actually. Brian Johnson, Hector Velasquez, they're going to fill the holes for the time being, and they're solid guys. They're solid minor leaguers coming in spot starts, but I wouldn't want to rely on them too long, and I'm a little worried about that and how long it's going to take some of these guys, Pomeranz, to get going. You worry, of course, about the Price injury concerns. And I think the biggest thing that people aren't really talking about, Chris Sale fell apart down the stretch last year. And
yeah, he did.
The Red Sox absolutely need to figure out a way to keep him healthy and manage his innings and not have him run out of gas in the playoffs. Because if they don't do that, what's the point of having Chris Sale if he's just going to have a 7.56 ERA in September and October? You know, so I think that that's something to watch, and that's something I worry about, on top of the fact that their bullpen is – it has potential, but it's still a little shaky. I think you could see some a bit of a step back from Kimbrel, coming off an amazing year. And then, of course, Tyler Thornburg and Carson Smith, the two guys who are supposed to be their setup men. I just don't know how healthy they're going to be. So,
all right, so, Chris, give me an actionable number here. What is the win total for the year?
I think – I'm going to say 94-95 wins. I think they go a little over, you know, because I just think that this is a better team than last year. And they didn't really get worse. They didn't really lose anybody major. And I think a lot of guys are due for bounce backs. And even if you take a bit of a regression from Sale, who I don't really think you get a regression from a guy like that, who's a clear-cut, you know, top-five pitcher in the baseball, and Kimbrel, I mean, the rest of their guys, you could argue, had relatively down years. So I think the Red Sox are going to be good. I did say the Yankees, I think, are going to be a little better. And, I mean, why don't I let you guys, or at least you, Joe, get into it with the Yankees.
Before you get there,
and I want to hear
Connor's
rebuttal.
Thoughts on the Red Sox. So, Connor, are you as optimistic on the Red Sox as Chris is here? 95 wins, that's a tall order.
Yeah, that's a tall order. I don't think I'm quite that optimistic, but I'm right around where he is, to be honest with you. I got the Yankees a little in front of the Red Sox, which I'll get into why in a little bit. But as far as the Red Sox specifically, I don't see the rotation that everyone talks about with the Red Sox. I'm going to be honest with you guys, because Sale is a stud. I mean, there's no doubt, as you guys pointed out, though, there's a little bit of a concern with how he ended the year. But I'm going to go with the assumption that Sale is going to be Sale. And when Sale is Chris Sale, he's one of the most underappreciated elite players in the league, in my opinion. He's right there, right behind Clayton Kershaw. And perhaps with a little bit of a, I don't want to say decline, but where Kershaw's been going the last couple of years, Sale is putting himself right up there when you consider he pitches in the American League, which is much more difficult. He's in the AL East last year and was unbelievable. So I love Sale. There's no doubt about that. But then after that, I like Price to bounce back this year. There's good reports coming out of camp. When he's on the field, he's a good pitcher. He only has to be a two for this team. He doesn't have to be an ace. I like him in the two spot, but then after that, Pomeranz, a little bit of regression from this year. Porcello, we found out last year that he is who we thought he was, which is
about a decent 3 or 4. And then after that, I like Erod, but he's hurt. Steven Wright, forget him, and he's hurt. And then they got Brian Johnson and Hector Velasquez stepping in. It'll only be for the short term probably, but I don't see a rotation that knocks my socks off, you know. And then when you look past that,
I agree with you.
The difference between – I don't think that the rotation is that much better than the Yankees, that it can compete with how great the Yankees bullpen is and the Yankees lineup, which I think is better than the Red Sox as well. So that's my overall perspective on the two. As far as the Red Sox lineup, I do see where Chris is coming from a positive regression perspective. And most importantly, they added J.D. Martinez, who is going to be a big addition to the Red Sox. I think everyone forgets the fact that two years ago and way before that, they had David Ortiz right in the middle of that lineup, and that made everyone around him better. And
I don't
think
forget,
screaming...
Connor. I'll never forget.
Yeah, I mean, that's a bigger deal than any of the regression that these guys are going to have, is that they got J.D. Martinez
really
in the middle now. And that's going to have a really positive effect, I think, on the guys at the top of the order. It's going to affect what kind of pitches those guys see. And they're not going to have to be something that they're not. J.D. Martinez is the one true power hitter in this lineup. And I think that that'll be a big addition for them. There's no doubt. Now, there is a downside of that, which is that Hanley Ramirez is going to have to play the field now, which isn't exactly a good thing from a defensive perspective. So I like the lineup. I like Benintendi a lot. We'll start in the outfield. I do think Mookie will, I don't want to say bounce back because he was really good last year, but I do think he'll be a little better than he was last year and return to being one of the best overall players in baseball. I like
he was
Jackie
good
Bradley
last
Jr.
year, but a lot of it, I think, was because of the defense. That kind of saved him. He had a bit of an off year at the plate.
Right. I do expect him to bounce back offensively. If you crunch the numbers, he really wasn't doing much differently from as far as his batted ball profile. He was still hitting the ball hard. His
I think the
walk
power's been the problem
numbers,
with him, right? And for most of the rest
Yeah, and the batting average, I don't want to get into all the nerdy statistics.
I take
but
a
the
lot
batting
of first
average,
pitch strikes.
Yeah, and, you know, it's interesting. I was listening to Jim Bowden, who I'm not a big fan of, but I listen to his radio show sometimes, and he was in the Red Sox camp talking to Alex Cora about how the Red Sox philosophy in recent seasons up and down their system has been to be very patient at the plate, particularly on first pitch strikes, as you pointed out with Mookie. But if you look up and down the lineup, they take a lot of pitches. And Alex Cora at least talked about kind of changing that approach to be a little more aggressive when it's opportune to do so. So I'm kind of interested to see how that plays out. But yeah, Mookie takes a lot of pitches, but that's his game. Really, if you look at it, the one thing that was down was his batting average on balls in play. Yeah, the power was down a little bit as well, I believe. But the batting average on balls in play was really down, and there was nothing in his profile for that to happen. So I think that his batting average will rebound for sure. I'm pretty convinced of that. And I think he's going to be fine. I think he's going to go back to being elite. So I love Mookie. Jackie Bradley's good. He fields well. He runs okay. The offense should get rebound a little bit, I think. And then, but Pedroia, I don't know when he's going to play, so I guess Eduardo Nunez is going to step in there, right, Chris?
Yeah, Nunez should be the guy, and it might be a
I don't even think that might be an upgrade at this point.
No, yeah, Nunez is really good. He's an underrated player, and he can play everywhere.
I think that was a pretty underrated signing for them, because if not, I mean, they might have had, you know, Brock Holt out there for 40 games, which was not really going to be an option.
Who was that other dude that was playing for them last year? Marrero?
Devin Marrero, who they actually just traded to the Diamondbacks for cash.
Oh, good job. You can get the Diamondbacks to give you anything for take any bad players. It's really unbelievable.
I mean, in defense of that move, Devin Marrero is pretty terrible. So it's despite trading the depth, I think, though, having Nunez is great. He was great in providing the versatility last year when they had the injuries late season. And hopefully, I mean, yeah, maybe you can argue Nunez right now at this stage of their careers is better than Pedroia, but I think this team is still better with a healthy Dustin Pedroia.
Yeah, because then Nunez can fill in other places as well. Now, what's the deal with Devers? I heard something about him getting a little banged up. Is he going to be healthy for the start of the year?
Yeah, Devers I think will be fine. The one thing I guess people could worry about is his defense. He's got some raw talent there, but he has been known to have some errors. So, you know, there will be games where you might see JD in the outfield, and then you might slide Devers to DH. There's a lot of ways that Cora can go with this, especially once Pedroia gets healthy. And I'm excited to see that, especially after a few years of John Farrell, where the managers did not have a clue in terms of you know, how to manage a baseball team, both in the clubhouse and on the field.
Indeed.
All right, hey. So, all right. So, what are we, Connor? Where are you in the plug all the numbers into your prediction model here? Are you at 90? You're sounding like you're around 92, 93, if I'm gauging
correctly. I wish I had a wins prediction model, but I'm right around probably 92 to 94. I mean, they're still a really good team, and they could certainly win the division. I like the lineup. I do think the lineup will be better than it was last year. I think the rotation will probably be you get Price back, but I think Pomerantz will be down a little bit. They got some injuries on the back end. I think it'll be around where it was. And then the bullpen, you know, they are getting, as Chris mentioned, two nice pieces back in the bullpen that really didn't pitch an inning for them last year.
Hopefully.
And yeah, so I like the bullpen as well. People have given it a hard time over the last couple of years, but the bullpen will be solid, I think. So I'll have them right around 93, 94. I just think that the Yankees are exceptional and a little better.
Yeah, so let's talk about the Yankees a little bit now. And if I may, I'll jump in here. I think the Yankees, and, you know, I'm basing this off of their season win total projection and also on Fangraphs, which is only, I think, projecting them for like 93 wins, if I'm not mistaken. I think they won 91 last year. I honestly think
they're underrated right now.
And that's not because, I mean, everyone knows about the lineup and the addition of Giancarlo Stanton. And you know, I don't think that it's overhyped what they're going to do offensively. But I think people are underrating the effect that having that bullpen is going to be, is going to have on that team for the full season. I mean, they got Robertson and Canely in mid-July, late July. I don't remember exactly when they got them last year. But that was kind of what put them over the top and made them a World Series contender is really, I mean, they have far and away, not even close, best bullpen in baseball. And in a day and age when, you know, teams are moving towards the five-inning starter and then get it to your bullpen as quick as possible, this is just going to be a huge luxury for them to have the entire season. I'm glad they're keeping Chad Green in the bullpen, at least for the start of the year. I didn't like the whole moving him to the starter setup, so I like where that he's staying. And really, I mean, Betances stunk down the stretch last year, so if they get anything out of Betances, I just don't see how this team loses games after the sixth inning that they're trailing. So, and I don't think they're going to be trailing much because that offense is so good. I honestly think, and tell me if I'm off base here, but I honestly think that this win total should be more like 97, and I think they're going to win 100 games this year.
Well, I guess it's hard to really set totals like so high, you know, like, you know, we talk about it in any sort of totals with gambling, you know, like, for example, you look at a Rockies game that ends like 12 to like 17 or something, like they are not going to set the total at 20. It's just not going to happen. So it sets an extreme example, but I mean, I agree with you. And I think you said it pretty well that, you know, what I was trying to say a little bit when I was talking was the rotation plus the bullpen here is going to be dominant. And you have three guys who could arguably be an ace if they pitch to their promise in Tanaka, Sonny Gray, and Luis Severino. And a fourth guy is Jordan Montgomery, who had a pretty damn good year last year and I think is probably going to be, you know, a very nice fourth starter for them. And like you said, handing it to the bullpen – It's going to be a tall task for teams to come back against them. The one thing that would concern me a little bit is, like I said, everyone thinks that this offense is unstoppable, and it very well may be. The trio of Judge, Stanton, and Gary Sanchez is just disgusting in terms of power potential there. But, I mean, you're going to expect a bit of a regression from Stanton and Judge. And it doesn't mean they're going to be bad players. They're going to be very good still, but they were just so good last year. And I mean, there could be some other regressions elsewhere in terms of, I don't know, maybe a Brett Gardner, maybe even an Aaron Hicks or a Didi.
Yeah. I mean, a lot of players on the Yankees had their best season last year. I mean, Judge,
that's what I mean. And they absolutely have the potential to get better. I mean, like a guy like Judge, like sure he'll regress because he was just like otherworldly, but he's going to be a great player. And a guy like Aaron Hicks, like, yeah, you could argue like he had his best season, but like what if his best seasons are ahead of him? But, you know, when I look at past that that trio, and especially when I look into that infield right now with the injury to Greg Bird, I mean, you know, we were talking about it before the show. You got Tyler Austin, Neil Walker, and then Didi, of course, who's solid, and then Brandon Drury, a third. And it's a little, I would say, just concerning if I was putting stake in this offense being, you know, unstoppable, as people are saying.
It's slightly concerning, but at the same time, I mean, they were starting Todd Frazier / Chase Headley last year at third. They were starting Starling Castro
at
second. Headley was all right, and Castro was all right, but I'd argue that Neil Walker is an upgrade from Starling Castro.
Mm-hmm.
And then
I think
Starling
Frazier did pretty well though last year. At least
who
in the beginning he did. Starling.
Yeah, he was good at the beginning, but I think that was more of a flash in the pan than anything else. I think Walker is just an all-around better player. I think Drury's probably a little bit of a downgrade from Todd Frazier, but not by much. I mean, the Bird loss is big, but they played three quarters of the year without Bird last year, and they still won 91 games. And they have not even – we're not even talking about the two guys they have in the minors, and Duhar, who had a ridiculous spring, who I don't – I mean, you never know if it's going to translate to the majors, but he looks really good. And then Gleyber Torres, who just happens to be a top five prospect in baseball, just waiting down there in the minors too. Connor, your thoughts on the Yanks?
Yeah, let me chime in on the infield here, because I'm not buying what the Yankees are selling right now, that they're going to be starting Drury and Austin and Wade. I know exactly what's going on here. Brian Cashman's a smart man, and he's got those two guys waiting in the minor leagues for, in my opinion, all the 2 or 3 weeks, and they're going to be up playing almost every day. That's what I think. I think Drury is a nice bench piece, a nice utility piece, who I think can play a few positions, if I'm not mistaken. But we're talking about a guy who, let's see, I ran some numbers on him. He has a career 767 OPS in over 1,000 plate appearances, and this is in Chase Field, pre-Humidor. I don't know if I'm pronouncing that right. Humidor.
Yeah, I think that's
Humidor.
Right.
Whatever, Humidor. Whatever's going on there, we should do a brunch show on that, but I mean, and
I've
he took
had,
a
I've
little step backwards.
For show to talk about the Humidor.
I know, there's
people
been some talk on Twitter.
Yeah, we should talk about it. It's a really interesting topic. I read a couple really interesting articles about it. But anyway, this is a guy who, like I said, has played in Chase Field and has never been even a above-average hitter, and he took a little step backwards last year. Like I said, I think in the long term he's a nice bench piece for them, but I'm not buying that he's the solution at third base, especially when they could have made some moves on the open market to get a better starter than that. So I think they're planning on bringing up Andujar. And then I think Torres is going to play second. And I think that Neil Walker, as Joe said, is an upgrade over Starling Castro last year. I like Neil Walker a lot. I think he's a nice acquisition for them. So I think that they'll be just fine. And when you look at the outfield, and yes, I do agree with Chris that Judge and Stanton, let's just put it this way, they're not going to do better than they did last year. And if anything, even if they take a small step back, they still play really well in that park. They're going to be exceptional. And then their outfield depth is just ridiculous. Hicks is a very interesting guy to me. He's kind of the X factor in the lineup this year. When you look at the fact that he had a high pedigree, he was a first-round pick, he had lots of good seasons in the minors, but it had never translated before last season. And then suddenly he's got an 847 OPS last year. Before that, he had never been above 727 on a season. And he had played a pretty significant amount of games in a number of seasons. So it'll be very interesting to me to see how Hicks does. He's the one guy I'll have my eye on early on to see, can he do what he did last year? Because then you can look at guys like Gardner. Beattie's another interesting one. Again, a guy who didn't really have a history of hitting like that beforehand, but he is a lefty in that park, which is just unfair. So I like the lineup a lot, to be honest with you. Neil Walker is a nice pickup. I do think the young guys are going to be up. And as Joe said, Andujar had an incredible spring. He's a good contact hitter. He's got kind of unconventional lack of power for a third baseman, but he sprays the ball around the field. And then Torres is a stud. I think he's a prospect who people are sleeping on after that injury. You remember that beforehand he was like an elite prospect being talked about all the time, and he's back healthy now, and no one's really talking about it. So I think that they've got the pieces to step into that infield and fill out the gaps, even with Bird out.
Neil Walker can just slide over. They bring Torres up, and then the outfield is going to hit, because even behind Hicks, you have Ellsbury, who we haven't even mentioned yet, who's a decent bench guy and still in the field well. And then Gardner is a player, and he's a good player. He does a lot of things well. He's an underrated player, and really the only knock on him, we could say that maybe the age gets to him, but all these guys can play. They can all hit. Most of them can field. It's a lights-out lineup. That's my thought.
So you guys are joining me in the over 94.5 right now?
Over 94.5, yeah, I'd put it at over.
If I had to choose, right, I'd pick over.
I bet. Ridiculous.
So. Good faith. Bet it.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, the bullpen. Yeah, and you didn't even talk about the bullpen right now, Connor. But, yeah, I mean, I think that's the difference. That's the difference between them and everyone else. That's why I think, I mean, I don't want to go get too far ahead of myself and start talking playoffs. But, I mean, that's, if you look back to last year, that's the reason they were able to be so competitive in the playoffs. I mean, they were pulling their starters after five, after six, and, you know, relying on these, you know, Chapman, Chad Green. They pitched 8 2/3 out of their bullpen in the wild card game. So they're going to rely on it. And it all comes down to health, too. And you've seen, you know, it's happened so many times in the past where you hype up a team, you hype up a couple teams before the season starts, and they get a couple injuries in April and nothing pans out. So that is always the risk of betting an over on a team total, which is why I tend to bet unders more so than overs, because if you bet unders, injuries can only help you, which is kind of what happened with my Giants under. I already got two starters down, which, I mean, I'm not necessarily celebrating Baumgartner getting hurt again, but it did help my under. But, yeah, it's never possible to predict injuries, so you never know. But it seems like all three of us here think the Yankees are going to win the division.
Yeah, the one thing we haven't really talked about in depth is the Yankees rotation, which, as I think Chris mentioned, it's not bad. And I was kind of doing a side-by-side with the Red Sox rotation, looking at, in order, Severino versus Sale. There's obviously a slight advantage for the Red Sox there, but Severino's an absolute stud, don't kid yourself. And then Tanaka, who I think is really good. I'm a Tanaka fan. He's going to bounce back off of last year. I'll tell you that for a fact. You look at the numbers in the second half, they were very good. I like Tanaka. Is he as good as Price? I don't know, but there's not an overwhelming advantage for the Red Sox there. And then after that, Sonny Gray. I don't agree with Chris that he's like a potential ace. I think he's a good three. I think he's maybe a decent two, but he's solid in that spot. The Red Sox, to me, kind of lack a third starter. And then Montgomery has high upside, maybe developed into a three or a four. And then CC, Chris, you forgot to mention, the future Hall of Famer.
I'm not really expecting too much out of CC right now.
No, wow, he's down CC again, man.
Oh, man. I'm expecting some regression from CC this year. I think he'll be back around a 4.2, 4.3 ERA if I had to put a number on it. But still, he's a
That's not bad. I'd sign up
five.
For that in a second.
Yeah, exactly. Well, you look at the last 2 years, it was a lot lower than that. Now, the one thing I look at with the Yankees is that if they have any starting pitcher injuries, that's the one thing that could get them, because they didn't really have anything. Now, you would know much better than I would, Joe, but I was kind of looking around at what the possibilities would be if a starter went down. I'm looking at Chance Adams, Luis Sessa.
Yeah.
I don't even know who these guys are, but I did look into them. And
Adams is pretty highly touted, but they were hesitant to bring him up last year, which makes me think there's something wrong with him. I don't know exactly. I mean, I've obviously never seen him pitch, so I don't know exactly what could be wrong with him.
Right.
But they were definitely not in a hurry to bring him up. So I think if there was an injury, they might look elsewhere. They might look outside the organization to try to
Absolutely.
Get help.
Absolutely. That's what I think they would do, which obviously they have the prospect depth to do something like that. You look at where's the guy. They still have Clint Frazier, right? They haven't done anything
yes.
with him yet, right?
Yeah. Yeah,
what are they going to do with Clint Frazier with the Stanton?
Yeah,
signing?
He's kind of blocked everywhere.
I don't see it. So I think that dealing Frazier for a pitcher, if a pitcher goes down, would make a lot of sense. I'm looking at Adams' minor league numbers. The strikeout numbers aren't great. He walks a decent amount of guys. For those who we like to look at XFIP, it was 406 in AAA, which isn't that good. That could be the one thing that gets the Yankees, in my opinion, because they have plenty of offensive depth to withstand injuries, to be honest with you. Even if somebody goes down in the outfield, they got five decent outfielders, and then in the infield, especially with those young guys, they have depth there too. So the one thing I'm looking, and the bullpen is obviously just disgusting, but the starters, there's not much behind those five. So if they get one or two injuries, it'll be interesting to see how that plays out.
All right, so there you have it. AL East brunch model predictions. We all think the Yanks are the team to beat, but we think the Red Sox are pretty good too. I think both of them will probably make the playoffs. Let's move over
actually,
to the NL
East. I'm
going to
pick the Sox. I'm going to pick the Sox to win the division. I'm just doing it just to be a little contrarian. Like I said, I think the Yankees are a little better, but I think it's so close right now that I would be remiss to not pick my boys. So I'm just going to put it on the record. I'll take Boston.
Can we talk Blue Jays real quick? What are the Blue Jays going to do this year? I know that we won't talk about it for long. But
yeah,
people are...
I don't want to talk about them for too long because I don't want to run out of time here. We still have to talk about the NL East. But I don't have much hope for any of the other AL East teams because I think these teams are so much better than. But
yeah,
the Blue Jays are getting some love.
Christian,
I mean, their win total is 83.
I think that they have a chance to have a solid rotation here, and it's a lot will depend on Aaron Sanchez.
Very
you know what he does if he stays healthy, but
yeah, that's what I keep.
I would worry about the lineup a little bit.
I've heard multiple people say, like, if this Blue Jays rotation is healthy, it could be one of the best in the league. I'm not seeing it. Even if you run out Stroman, Aaron Sanchez, J.A. Happ, Marco Estrada, and Jaime Garcia,
I mean, the thing
you
is, everyone
one
loves
the best
Stroman.
In the league.
Everyone's obsessed
yeah,
with Stroman.
I know.
And J.A. Happ has...
Even if you look at the most optimistic Stroman season, he's a decent one, maybe. For me, he's a low-end ace, you know. And then Sanchez, I'm not buying as even a two on a good team. For me, he's more like a three. He rode a lot of luck in 2016. If you look at the numbers, he's got these blisters all the time. And then Happ is solid. I'll give him that, but he's not
Happ's
more than
been
good
solid,
three.
But he's 35 and
he's
and
also
Estrada,
35.
And Estrada's 35 too. I think they're both. They're on the back end of their career, and Estrada really, really started to struggle last year. He had been one of those guys that was pitching above his peripherals for a while, and then last year kind of all hit the fan, and he
just
was pretty bad last year.
Absolutely, I agree with you. And to me, he's like a four, definitely nothing more than a four or five at this point. I want to throw out a couple of names. I did like the Grichuk signing that they made. He's got a lot of untapped power. Well, he hits for power, which in Rogers Center should play well. I think they made a couple of nice under-the-radar acquisitions in him. They also picked up, I don't really even know how to say his name, Aledmys Diaz from the Cardinals. That guy, like, went into last year, had some hype around him, and now he's just, like, a bench infield option for them. Somehow they picked up, like, every underperforming Cardinals player because they got O in the bullpen, too.
Yeah.
I don't know how they got all these guys, but I do like Grichuk. They picked up Granderson, who, again, he takes a lot of walks. He hits for power, which should be a good fit in that stadium. He's obviously not going to, you know, kill it, but he's a decent corner outfield option. And then the lineup's okay, but, you know, we got to see what Justin Smoke does. He's the wild card on the team for me, a guy who for 7 years was an average or below average major league player, and then all of a sudden when he's like 30 or something, he becomes what people thought he would be. So that's an interesting one for me, and also a guy to keep an eye on, an under-the-radar name, Devin Travis, who talked about a guy who a couple of years ago people were hyping up as, you know, one of the next big things, and here we are. He's still just turned 27, and no one said a word about him, obviously because of the injury struggles he's been through. When he does play, he's a solid player. He hits well. He feels well. So if he can stay healthy, that's a big deal, and we'll see what Smoke does, but I'm not seeing it. When you look at the rotation where people are hyping it up to be, it doesn't match up for me.
Yeah. All right, let's hop on over to the NL East. We have to be much quicker with the NL East because we only have 20 minutes to go here on this episode.
Let's do it.
So let's hit
Phillies. We'll get to the other teams plenty.
Yeah, absolutely. Let's hit the Phillies and the Mets. And I think that now you're starting to see some Mets love come in after people saw Syndergaard and Mats. Looked pretty good in spring training, and DeGrom has been a rock for them the last few years. So we'll start with Chris here. Chris, your thought on the Mets, you know, Conforto is going to be huge for them when he comes back. He's probably their best pure hitter. It's between him and Cespedes. Do you share this optimism that some people have for the Mets this year?
I do. I think they're actually going to be a pretty good team. They'll definitely be in the wild card race. It's tough that they are in a division with the Nationals, although that may not matter next year. But, you know, like you said, I mean, you have two potential Cy Young candidates in DeGrom and Syndergaard. I think you get a bounce back for Matt. And I think this lineup is probably better than it's been in a while. Like, Conforto, like you said, he's got the injury. But still, once he comes back, he should be a stud. And then Cespedes, Jay Bruce, getting him back was a good move. You could see maybe a bit of a breakout from Amed Rosario. And then Todd Frazier was not a bad signing, and who knows if Adrian Gonzalez has anything left in the tank. So I think the Mets could be a solid wild card team. And, well,
Gonzalez,
we'll
that is.
I mean, when I say anything, I mean anything. But, you know, we'll talk. We apologize to the Mets fans. We'll talk much more in depth about them as the season goes on, because we will put the spotlight on them, especially, like I said, this season. But I think the Mets should be in for a pretty solid year.
Connor, what about you?
It's obviously hard for me. For those who don't know, I am a big Phillies fan, so I'm a little bit biased in this Mets.
And you can talk about the Phillies here, too.
Yeah, I'll get to the Mets real quick. The interesting thing about the Mets and the Phillies is that they're both high-variance teams. We're looking at teams with talent. We're looking at teams with untapped talent, or in the Mets' case, talent that can't stay on the field. So there's a lot of outcomes that could happen here. The good thing for both of these teams is that there is no clear second wild card in the NL, in my opinion, or even a first. I think that the Cardinals would be my pick to take the first wild card, but after that, it is literally wide open. When you look at the injuries to the Giants, the Diamondbacks lost some pieces. I think it's wide open. So either of these teams could be on the high end of that variance and have a really nice season. Now, just from a source of mine, that the let me run down the projected lineup for the Mets day. And it is Nimmo. Is that how you say that guy's name?
Yeah, Brandon Nimmo, yep.
Yeah, he's okay. Cespedes, Bruce, Asdrubal Cabrera, Todd Frazier. Now, this is when it gets good. Adrian Gonzalez,
yeah.
6. Kevin Pulecki, 7. Noah Syndergaard, 8. Rosario, 9. I heard they're doing the old pitcher hitting,
yeah,
news, which should be interesting.
The old Mickey Callaway.
Yeah, that's a brutal bottom of the lineup there. I mean, I don't know how Adrian Gonzalez is playing meaningful games for a team in the National League right now, which means he has to
well,
be
what's
in
the deal
field.
With Darno? Is he hurt?
No, I don't think he's hurt. Not sure what Darno's deal is, but Gonzalez is playing at first because Dominic Smith is hurt, and
yeah,
they really need Dominic Smith, because that's a massive hole. Adrian Gonzalez was absolutely
Although I don't
year.
Believe in Dominic Smith. I don't think he's going to be any good.
Yeah, we'll see. I mean, he could be okay. He could certainly pretty easily be better than Adrian Gonzalez. when I'm looking at – my prediction is that the Mets will finish in front of the Phillies most likely. Obviously, with the Phillies, there's lots of pieces that we don't know what they're gonna give this year. But when I was looking at that lineup, the Mets certainly are one or two injuries in that lineup away from really throwing out some guys that shouldn't even be
right.
playing
But that's
baseball.
Also
so,
partly because they already have a couple injuries in the starting lineup.
Right, exactly. So there's a lot of possibilities here, but as long as Syndergaard and DeGrom are healthy, you got to think that they're going to at least compete, that they're going to be better than they were last year. We'll see with Matt. The interesting thing about Matt is even when he has been on the field, like when he came back last year and pitched for a while, he wasn't the same Matt, and a lot of people aren't talking about that, but he hasn't been elite or, like, really good on the mound for a long time. So I'm
he has looked good in a few spring training games to close out this year, though. I have actually watched him in a game, and he looked very good.
That's good. That's good for – well, not good for me, but good for the Mets. So it'll be interesting. I think that the Mets will be there. I think they'll be competing, but the good teams in the National League for me are so good that I don't see either the Mets or the Phillies, you know, actually competing.
I think there's a scenario. I think there's a scenario where the Mets could potentially compete for an NL crown.
I guess there is. Are you counting on, like, Harvey rebounding?
It would have to be either Harvey or Mets becoming, like, you know, a low-end one or high-end two, like going back to that form. Because
You
have one of them performing like that, and then you have DeGrom and Syndergaard, who are already ones, I mean, you get Conforto back, and you just think, if the Mets stay healthy all year and get healthy, I think I could see them competing for an NL title. I mean, it's one of those things where a lot of things got to go right, but I think there's a lot of teams in the NL that you can't even say that about. So,
absolutely.
I don't think all hope is lost for Mets fans yet this year. I mean, it probably will be in about 2 weeks, but for now, I think they have some kind of hope.
I can agree
with Connor,
that.
What about your Phils?
Yeah, the Phils are going to be one of the most interesting teams to watch this year, even if you're not a fan.
I'm very interested to see what the Phils do, especially because I think
the hitting's
very good. The lineup looks very good.
They have a lot of nice pieces offensively. It'll be interesting to see how they do. Obviously, Kingery is the exciting guy after the spring he had and the year he had in the minors last year, signing into that big deal, which, by the way, was, in my opinion, an incredible move by the Phillies. The way that you get value in the major leagues is you lock up these talented players before their arbitration years, and you get them to sign one of those 6-7-8-year deals, and that's what you saw with, like, how the Rays were able to compete for a while. They had Evan Longoria on a joke contract. Pretty sure the Diamondbacks had Goldschmidt on one for a while. That's the move. So I was very happy to see the Phillies do that. It'll be really interesting to see how his playing time shakes out, because theoretically he is blocked by a young infield when you're looking at
I'm Hoskins surprised to even see him on the major league roster.
Yeah, I think that it was part of that deal, you know. It was part of the deal. Like, he wasn't expected to make the team, and then right when that contract was signed a couple days ago, it was said that that was basically part of the deal, that he made the team out of the camp. So he's going to – I think that Gabe Kapler is going to manage in a kind of similar way to the way that Madden does, and that he's going to move a lot of pieces around. He's going to be doing those double switches. He's going to be moving fielders around. He's going to be making defensive substitutions late in games. So – that's kind of how he's approaching this. He's basically said that all of these guys are going to play, which is actually physically impossible. I read a quote by him the other day, like, you know, these guys are all going to look up at the end of the year and they're going to say, wow, I played every game. Well, that's not physically possible. But what I see happening, because you got Franco at third for now. You got Crawford at short. Cesar Hernandez, one of the most underrated players in baseball, at second, and Hoskins at first. Hoskins could play a little outfield, but they have a surplus of outfielders with
I thought Hoskins
Williams.
Was going to be the outfielder because they have Carlos Santana.
Oh, yeah, sorry. Yeah, my bad. Santana first, and then Hoskins is in the outfield already. And then they got Herrera in center, who I like a lot. The Philly fans knock way too much. He's a good player. And then Nick Williams and Altair platooning in one of the outfield spots. So they already have four ready outfielders playing in the outfield. There's not much room out there, which I think they are saying that Kingery can play the outfield. I'm not sure. But he's going to move all over the infield. But what I see happening is, number one, an injury. That's how these things usually play out. And when you look at guys like Bellinger and Judge, who were really talented players last year, who people were questioning, are they going to have a spot? You know, these things tend to take care of themselves. So it'll be really interesting. The lineup has potential to be good. Hoskins is a beast, so it'll be fun to see him play a full year. But my main concern with the Phillies is the back end of their rotation. You know, we'll see what Arrieta does, but even if he's not an ace, he's still going to be a decent two or a three. I like Nola a lot. If Nola can stay healthy, I think he's got the potential to become an ace this year. But then after that, Eichhoff's out for a while. They're throwing out Pivetta, Lively, Velasquez. If you follow these guys, none of them are really high upside guys.
The rotation's a little bit questionable.
So that's where I see it catching up to them, especially from a depth perspective. They have a few minor league guys behind that, but none of them – most of the Phillies' good pitching prospects are low in the system right now at one of the lower levels. So that's where I think that in the long run, over 162-game season, they probably won't be able to keep up is the back end of the rotation. But we'll see if a couple of those guys surprise at the back end and a couple of the hitters step up, then they could very easily be competing for a wild card.
And, Chris, do you have any thoughts on the Philadelphia Phillies for the 2018 season?
I mean, Connor said it best. I agree with most of what he says, and if there's a Phillies guy out there to listen to, it's him. And the one thing I'll say, too, is it'll be interesting to see what Gabe Kapler does with this team as he starts to implement the analytics on the Philadelphia Baseball Club.
Absolutely. Right. Especially when you look at where the Phillies were at a few years ago.
in the Ruben Amaro and Charlie Manuel days, it's kind of flipped completely from then. So it'll be very interesting to see that.
Connor has been very team fire Ruben Amaro for as long as I can remember. So you've moved into a new era, which is very nice for you.
Oh, and I like what Klentak's done, but Ruben Amaro has got to be like one of the worst general managers in the history of sports. But that's topic for another day.
All right, so we are winding down on this show. We will definitely do more Phils, more Mets, plenty of Yanks and Red Sox. Connor, because you called in through the guest line, we have to let you go so we can open up the guest line for a few calls at the end of the show. But we appreciate you coming on, and I appreciate it. We will definitely have you on again to talk some more baseball throughout the season, and we will talk some model as well.
Sounds great. I appreciate it. Thanks for having me, guys.
Thanks, buddy.
All right.
So that was Connor Egan. Thanks so much, Connor, for coming on. We still have 9 minutes to go on the show, so we have our guest line open, 818-688-6658. Chris, we have two more segments to get to, really one, and then we'll talk briefly about the model at the end. But for now, are you ready for a return, Chris, the return of the In or Out?
Yeah, let's do it.
Everybody in?
Clear out your seats.
In.
In.
Fuck yes, I'm in.
It's time to play.
Hey, you can't spell involved without an in.
In or out.
All right, Chris, so it's been a while. Do you remember how this works?
Yeah, I think as the creator of the segment, I think I don't need any more a refresher course. I'll be good.
All right, so this segment is entitled Concesh In or Concesh Out, where we will discuss various concession food items at Major League Baseball stadiums. Chris, are you ready for this one?
Let's do it.
All right, so the first item, the classic, I like to call it, the American classic, the hot dog, the straight-up hot dog, in a concession or concesh out. Chris, go ahead.
Concession, nothing better than having a dog at a game.
What do you put on your hot dog? Are you a ketchup or a mustard guy? A relish? How about old
I do both. I wouldn't hate some relish. I usually do ketchup and mustard, mix the two together. It's a very good combination.
All right, I'm in on the hot dog as well. Concession, I'm actually I could go both ways. I think if I put kraut on it, I usually like to go mustard. If I'm doing straight up, I'll go ketchup. Even those onions sometimes, you get those on there, that's a pretty nice addition as well. All right, let's go on to a variation of the hot dog, the corn dog. Chris, are you concession or concesh out?
Joe, there's not going to be too much here to be concesh out on here, just to let you know. I'm a big fan of the corn dog, so I'm concession.
All right, Chris, I have a good news. We do have a caller calling in. I don't know who it is, so let's open up the phone lines and let's bring him in to a little concession or concesh out. Who is this? State your name, sir.
Hey, Joe. This is your good friend, Alec Bacher, host of Maybe Next
this.
Year podcast.
Look at this.
Wow,
Alec
fellow
Bacher
podcaster
on the line.
Calling in.
For first time,
I appreciate
time,
you calling
guys.
In, Alec. Do you
no
want
problem.
A – we're doing a little segment, in or out. It's called concession or concesh out. So I'll give you the next one, buddy.
Okay, I'll take it.
Are you concession or concesh out on Premio sausage?
Ooh. You know what? I'm going with concesh in on this one. I know eating sausage and peppers at games gets a little bit messy, but I mean when you're sitting in City Field Yankee Stadium in a hot summer day, you're just eating a sausage and Premio sausage and pepper. What's better than that? You got a beer in your hand, take it down. That's your meal for the game. You don't need to get up and get extra food also. That fills you up.
I like that. Alec, now I know you are a Mets fan. For those of you who don't know, I was on Alec's podcast, I think it was in September. Now, we were literally just talking about the Mets. I don't know if you were listening to that segment. I think that they have some potential this year. Alec, give me, before we let you go, expectation. What's your win total expectation for the Mets this year?
Well, I'm the overly optimistic fan, so I'm going to go with them staying healthy and Noah and DeGrom winning about 60% of their games, and the Mets going about 40-17 versus the NL East, So I'm giving them a final record of 89 and 73 with the first wild card, or the second wild card spot locked up, and they'll be going to Colorado to play the wild card game, and the Mets will come out of that game and face the Dodgers in the division series.
Wow, that is such an Alec Bates prediction.
Thank you.
Alec, I appreciate the call, man. Have a great night.
Hey, you too, Joe. Hopefully me and Richie can start it back up and you can hop back on maybe next year.
Sounds good, buddy. Talk to you soon.
Thanks, Alec.
All right, hey, Chris, Alec Bates, you're calling in. Did you ever think he would be the first the first caller?
I did not. That's how I'll put it.
All right, hey, we'll go to our next concession or concess out. I'm glad that we could get some fan opinion on this. And again, 818-688-6658 if you want to weigh in. Chris, let's go to some of the more obscure stadium concession items. How about the grasshoppers that are being served up in Seattle?
I'm actually very concession on this, and I would love to take a trip to
Seattle.
I don't want to see the city, but also to try these grasshoppers. I mean, it's food. It's an animal. It's no different, really. I get the you know, people being skeeved out about it, but there are a lot of people who eat bugs in this world, and I really don't see the problem. If they're dead and they're, you know, made to taste good, and it's, you know, I don't know, it's not going to do anything bad to me, then why not?
Yeah, Chris, I'm actually going to Seattle. I'm going to a Safeco Field at the end of July or end of June. I think I have to try them, right?
I don't think you can pass it up.
Especially
yeah,
since now it's on the concession or concession out. I think I'm going to be concession out, but I'm going to reserve the right to come back to this one, and I will let you know after I get back from Seattle whether or not I'm officially concession or concession out. All right, Chris, there's a big phenomenon going on at the Colorado Rockies Coors Field, bacon on a stick. Are you concession or concession out on that idea?
I'm definitely concession on that. I mean, you know, a lot of times to eat bacon, you have to have it complement a meal, but I don't really think that is a necessity. So I would say concession without a doubt, although I think my girlfriend would disagree. But
all right, let's bring in our next caller. We have another caller that wants to talk about bacon on a stick, apparently. Who is calling in? Please state your name, sir or ma'am.
Hey, man, this is Keith.
Keith, all right. Hey, Keith, how you doing?
Yeah.
Right now we are.
Long time,
how
first
been,
time,
Keith?
Man. I'm not here to talk about the In-N-Out. I'm here to talk about over under for the MLB season. All right.
Now, Keith, we don't have too much time
left
on the show, man. So
I got
we gotta,
it. I'll be
we gotta
very
hurry
quick.
Up.
I'll be very quick. Don't worry about it. Listen. All right. First off, these Yankee fans, man, bunch of scabs. Bunch of bandwagoners. I got the Yanks winning 87 games this year, and I got the Red Sox winning 91. Next point, the Mets. I got the Mets with 97 wins. 97, and I agree with that guy about the NL East. There's no one in this NL East that can hit the Mets pitching, and that's been proven when they're healthy. And last but not least, the San Diego Padres, folks. If you want a lock, let me tell you, their under is the lock. Team's going to win roughly 58 games.
All
right,
Keith,
thanks,
hey, we got to go, man.
Appreciate
ahead. The call.
All right.
Thank
no
you,
problem.
Keith. That was great. some bold
Chris,
predictions from Keith.
Chris, we're all out of time, man. Like, I don't know what else
yeah,
to tell you.
Yeah, well, that's okay. I mean, I think the Blog Talk show, we learned a bit on the fly here, and obviously we wanted to break down a lot in the early going. So for everyone who wanted to call in and did not get the chance to, we apologize, but we will be doing this many a time. I think we might be doing it every week as the season goes on, and we'll get to
we have a call on hold too right now. It's a shame, but our episode is actually ending, so we cannot take this call.
Whoever's calling
call
in
is,
right now, yeah,
call again next week. All right, thanks for listening, everybody, to this edition of the Sports Brunch. My name is Joe Caputo.
Check
that is
the
Chris
Malicki.
Check out the model. It's still available. We will do model talk next week. Follow us on Twitter at The Brunch Pod. Like us on Facebook at The Brunch Network. And on follow us on Instagram at The Brunch Network as well. This podcast will be posted once again in the morning as a full-length podcast, so you could check it out then as well. We once again appreciate you listening live. Our callers that called in, Connor Egan, Alec Bacher, and Keith, we appreciate the calls. And we will see you again next Wednesday night. Thanks a lot, everybody. Have a great rest of your week.
Thanks, everyone.